Generations, very little was written down, certainly by the Rebbeim, even by their Talmidim. It was a very loose movement of ideas. But every movement, in order to become more institutionalized, needs books that articulate, svarim that articulate, what are the values, what are the ideas of the movement. So we studied earlier in the year the Sefer HaTanya, which was one of the svarim. Around the same time, a little later, is the Sefer Noam Elimelech, the Elimelech of Luzansk. Luzansk is in Ukraine. And he's seen as a super Rebbe. I mean, a super Rebbe is a lot of different branches of Hasidus branch off from the Noam Elimelech. So his kever is a kever that people go to, and have hilulas at the kever. He's known in the in Hasidus as the Noam, after the Sefer, or Elimelech, in the Hasidus intonation. And this is the other Bible, the other Tanakh of Hasidus. There's some others, but this is written in a language that's easy-ish to understand. You don't need to know deep, deep Kabbalah. Just to give you a reference point, in the same generation, he's third generation. He's not a Talmud of the Besht, he's a Talmud of the Talmidim of the Besht. Al Shem Tov. Third generation is a sefer called Tolnos Yaakov Yosef, of Yaakov Yosef of Polnoi, which is also meant to be like the Bible and has all the basics of Hasidus in there. It's very hard to read because it's very deeply engrossed in Kabbalah. When I open it, I read a few words, but it's hard for me to really follow. So I'm not fully conversant in all the terms of Kabbalah. Here, this slight Kabbalah, but it's mostly readable. Now, this is taken to be such an iconic text, like I told you about the Sefer HaTanya, that it's read in the original. This is the way it was printed. And he has stars all over, these little asterisks all over, but they're not asterisks that are footnotes. Oh, and then on the bottom, he explains what the asterisk is. They're just asterisks, like in the Torah, where there's dots on top of letters. And in Hasidus, these asterisks have real literary function. So he didn't just put them there arbitrarily or casually, but he very carefully and delicately placed the asterisks at certain points. And this is not just a Sefer of Hasidus. This is the core Sefer of Hasidus. It's treated like you and I would treat Tanakh. That's how this is treated. Every word, what did he mean? The same way the Hasidim treat Tanya. So I picked a piece that's reflective of some of the Hasidic ideas. Moshe comes to Am Yisrael, and they don't listen to him. They don't listen to him because Kotzeruach and Avodah Kasha. I'll talk about this tonight in Eretz Hashem. They're working too hard. Their minds are shuttered. All sorts of reasons they can't listen to Moshe. And then Moshe turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he says, wait a second. If the Jews won't listen to me, then how will Paro listen to me? So first of all, Hasidus was very, very interested in communication. Because Hasidus felt that there was a breakdown in communication between Rabbanim and regular people. And how does a Rebbe speak to his Talmid, and how do I get the message into someone's heart? Kabbalistically, what's the communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael, between upper worlds and lower worlds? So the ability to receive information is something that Hasidus studies a lot. So here there's a breakdown, there's a malfunction in communication. The Jews aren't listening. Why are they not listening? Okay? So now you're getting a sense of where Hasidus brings in a completely different narrative and overlays it onto our narrative. We'd say they're working, they're hard, we're looking them sucking. Hasidus says no. The people in Mitzrayim, they were tzaddikim gemur. And they wanted to serve Hashem without any personal bias or any personal interest. And therefore, they didn't want to be redeemed, so they shouldn't work as slaves. They didn't want to be redeemed for personal pleasure. They didn't want to be redeemed to end their suffering. They only wanted to be redeemed for one and only one reason. Because when they're in Galus, the Shekhinah is suffering. And the Shekhinah suffering is a worse fate than any personal fate you can suffer. Okay, so here's a second aspect of Hasidus. How do we treat the Gullus? It's so frustrating. I'm living in Romania. I'm living in Hungary. Life's really, really indescribably horrific. Yeah, but forget about you. Think about the Shekhinah that's been in Gullus, daven for the Shekhinah. So Moshe comes with this great message that you'll be redeemed. They say, we don't want to listen. Because if we listen about our redemption, we'll be happy about it from a human standpoint. We'll be excited about it because of the prospects it will lend us for our redemption. We're only interested in one thing, the Shekhinah suffering. And until the Shekhinah ends its suffering, we're not going to listen to anything Moshe says. So this is a conscious decision on the part of the people not to listen to Moshe because they wanted to preserve the unbiased, selfless nature of Galus. The Shekhinah suffering is not about our suffering. But now Moshe is in a quandary because you need to have people in a state of simcha. And why do you need to have people in a state of simcha? Not because your psychologist would say that, not because your teacher would say that. Because in Kabbalah, to defeat certain aspects of the world of Noga, the world of Noga is where Hashem's presence is very, very, very concealed. And Paro represents that world because he's a neck, Oref, and defeat that, you need simcha. Now, don't ask me why. That would mean getting into the formulas of Kabbalah. But even without Kabbalah, we know there needs to be simcha to be redeemed. So now Moshe's in a quandary. Moshe's saying, well, I need to make you happy, but you don't want to be happy because you want to be sad as long as the Shekhinah is in suffering. And if you'll be happy, you're fearful that you may be happy for personal reasons. And that's the quandary that Moshe's facing. He says, they're not listening to me. They're not listening to me for good reasons because they want to suffer the Shekhinah's galus. But without the simcha, I can't defeat Paro. Not that it's a kal v'chomer that if the Jews don't listen, Paro won't listen. Maybe Paro will listen in a way the Jews won't. The Jews are not listening because they're so tired. Paro's not so tired. Paro just finished his 10th breakfast course. They're getting you guys ready for breakfast. Paro's finished breakfast, not that he won't listen. No. In order to defeat Paro, I need the Jews to be happy. In order for the Jews to be happy, they won't listen. They don't want to be happy because they're afraid of personal bias. And then he continues and he says, but Hashem taught Moshe how to make a tzaddik happy, even though he's afraid that the happiness will be personal, because happiness can be generated or channeled towards Avodas Hashem, towards helping the Shekhinah. So in the end, Hashem taught Moshe how to make the Jewish people happy and that the simcha shouldn't divert them from the purity of their thought. And then that becomes a major thesis of Hasidus. Right? How to create happiness is not selfish. Hasidus is a movement of happiness. It sounds cliched, but it's trying to redress a moment of sadness in Jewish history. The 18th century was a very, very sad moment. Most Jews are walking around drooping. They're poor as anything. The political organization has been disbanded. Have you heard the Vad Arba Aratzos? You know what that is? In the 17th and 18th century, the Jews of Poland, which is where most of the Jews live, were given para-political power. It's called Vad Arba Aratzos. The Polish monarchy allowed them to divide the land into four different districts, and they should collect their own taxes and pay to the king. Now, the king did it, King of Poland, I forget who it was, because he wanted to facilitate tax collection. So the best way to facilitate tax collection is to delegate it to local authorities and have them pay the taxes. But the Jews took that organization called the Vaad Arba Aratzos, and they turned it into like an internal governmental structure. They can make laws, they can make... Now, in the end of the 18th century, the Polish kingdom slowly dissolved. By 1792, I think. Basically, Russia swallowed up some, Prussia swallowed up some, Austro-Hungary swallowed up some. This is by the 19th century, the Polish, late 18th century, 1792. The Polish Empire disappears off the face of the map. Once it disappeared, then the Vaad Arba Aratzos was slowly being disbanded. So the Jews had no authority, there's no centralization. It was a very sad period. Hasidus tried to rebuild spirit and happiness, but happiness can be gaiety. Happiness can be frivolity, happiness can be selfishness. How do you create happiness while still maintaining the gravitas of what the galus is? So the answer is the galus is really suffering the Shekhinah. But in order to end the suffering of the Shekhinah, you need to be happy. How can the happiness not be self-serving? That was the moment that took place. So you see how he's building basic ideas of Hasidus in this conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe and the frustrated conversation between Moshe and Am Yisrael. It's just a taste for, of course, you can see if you're not a chassid, like, where does this come from? It's not what the pasuk says. But in the chassidus, it's not just what the pasuk is saying, but the pasuk is just the code. If you know the code, you know the darker conversations, there are deeper conversations. Okay? So this is a sefer Noam Eli Melech. It's called the sefer Noam. If you're in a chassidus place for Shabbos, you say, you know, Torah Torah, oh, what does the Noam say? That's it. Okay? Good morning, guys.